G'day and welcome to the FIFO podcast. I'm Paul Smith, the founder of Freedom in Finding Ourselves, and this podcast is all about FIFO, the good, the bad, and the ugly. The aim is to share a message with you from men and women that have struggled and overcome their own FIFO battles. I hope through this you can realise you're not alone and you can learn from others how they went on to turning their life around and leaving the industry, and also those that have implemented some key structures and strategies to make sure the FIFO lifestyle works for them. Welcome to episode 5 of the podcast, and today we're talking with Chris Wilson, who is the Managing Director of iPro Australia. He's a former FIFO worker. He's now using saliva biomarkers to measure stress and first-line defence immunity. They're creating a behaviour change movement by mapping stress with a goal to stop the burden and the burnout of all sorts of industries. Look forward to this chat. Enjoy, guys. Well, welcome, Chris. Thanks for coming on the podcast, mate, and having a chat to us. And just tell us a little bit about your background in around FIFO and how you came to being the Managing Director of iPro Australia and what iPro Australia is all about.
Yeah, thanks, Paul. Jeez. Where do I start? Okay, so the offshore game for me back in the North Sea, someone called me a North Sea tiger the other day, which I cringed at. So I was, I was kicked out of home and then tried to join the army. And I got medically discharged from there when I was 17, twiddling my thumbs, not earning any money, waiting for an operation. And my dad said to me, look, if you need some money, we can get you on a paint crew. And I was like, I've no idea, never painted in my life, but I'll give that a go. So for my 18th birthday, he bought me my offshore ticket. And then I was on a chopper the next day. So I landed on my first rig in the middle of the North Sea. And I was on paint crew and, you know, roustabouts through injuries. You go from paint crew roustabout, people get wiped out. And then finally, I was a young fella, so I could happy to throw myself around the drill floor, and ended up working in shakers and up the derricks and pulling pipe and stuff like that. So 5 years eventually flying out to the North Sea in different sectors, Dutch, where were we? Dutch, Danish, Scotland, just around there. And then eventually we lost a contract with Shell and they were sending my back to the Gulf of Mexico. And so it was a 23, 24 year old fella. They said, anyone who wants to walk, this is a really good time for obviously the people with the families and, you know, people who've been still need the job. That was the wording that was, you know, in the old meeting room, in the locker room. If you want to jump, jump now. And I kind of looked around and went, you know what, I'll do that. Yep, I'm ready to rock and roll. So took redundancy at the age of 20, what was it, 23, something like that. And I got my first mortgage when I was 18. So I rented my house out, bought a ticket to Australia, and that was it. 3 years later, I, you know, was living out of a bag and traveling around the world. So anyway, I tried to live in Australia. I just couldn't get through the front door. I kind of left school with nothing, really. No qualifications. And all I had was I was a health and safety rep on my rig. I was a HLA helicopter landing officer. So I had all my certificates from the rigs, but it didn't mean much in the old civvy world. So that was it. Eventually I got myself back into college, back into uni. I ended up being a teacher, which when I see friends from school, they're like, sorry? So got my uni degree, and part of my uni degree, because I was into sport and what have you, was to look at exercise immunology. And that's what I use the saliva kits for. And I got into Australia through my wife. So I piggybacked on her expertise, and that's when I started iPro Australia.
Wow. Before we get into iPro Australia, I'm intrigued to know a little bit about the rigs, because whilst there is a lot of that that happens in Australia, it's probably not as common as what we know as coal mining or iron ore, or the minerals that we have on land.
Yeah.
Tell us a little bit about what that experience is like living out there, because I couldn't imagine that part of it, living out in the middle of the ocean and some of the elements that we've discussed already.
Yeah. My experience of the rig, so as a 23-year-old young man, I can say that you'd fly out to the rig. I've never worked on a land rig, so the comparison is quite difficult for me, even though the mechanics are probably similar. So we used to get on a chopper, normally hungover. We might have had a 2-hour chopper flight with about 7 or 8 of us on the chopper. It depends on the size or the crew change. You just land on the rig, and then away you go. You straight into your shift, do your changeover, and straight into a 12-hour shift as soon as you land. Obviously, 12-hour shifts, like I imagine most of it is in that environment. And no females, all male. Young man, it was tough, you know, and I mean that. It was a good learning curve for me. It was a bit of a reality check as well. And so it was lots of fighting, lots of aggression, lots of, you know, I was the new boy. So you just get cable tied to pallets and, you know, you get all that whole environment, all where it's just testosterone filled, 100 fellas on a big metal rig for 3-4 weeks at a time. So I didn't know any different, to be honest. That was I just assumed that was how it was. So
it's a wild birthday present that your father said, okay, this is going to be good for you, son. Here's an opportunity. Happy 18th birthday. Good luck with that. Thanks, Dad. What do you say now to that?
Well, look, I was in a hole. I was in a hole at the time. So I didn't have a home to go to which, you know, I'm now a 40-year-old man, Paul, let's be honest. I look back and go, I was a bit of an idiot. And so I probably deserved everything I got. And my dad gave me the opportunity. And I got my first mortgage at the age of 18. And I went traveling and rented my house out for several years. So by the time I got to sell that house, that set me up very, very well. So, and here's the thing. So it's pure luck, because I got chucked out of my dad's house. And so I needed somewhere to live. So I went into a real estate agent and said, I need somewhere to live. I'm working. And the guy, I never know his name. I don't remember who he is, but he sat and he looked me in the eye and said, you've got two choices. Rent and pay someone else's mortgage, get a mortgage yourself and own your own house. That was as complex as the chat went. And I said, so hang on, if I'm going to pay someone else's mortgage, but I don't own anything, or I can pay my own mortgage. He went, yep. I went, well, I might as well get a mortgage. That was the, and as an 18-year-old boy sitting across the table from this real estate agent, I just went, okay. Let's start there. So
I've got no money, I've got no skills, I've got nothing, but I'll take a mortgage and dad's just going to send me out and fend for myself.
Yeah. Great. I was probably fending for myself for a while. but at the time, everyone's like, that'd be crazy. You'll be tied down. You won't be. And I was the one traveling around the world.
Yeah.
So look, it's a great start for me. So I've got nothing, I shouldn't say that. I have got certain images of the industry and you know, what it done, but the reality is it set me up very well.
Yeah, 100%. And so many people go to that, whatever the FIFO lifestyle they live for, to set themselves up. Mm. And for you, you were able to do that. A single guy, you're able to make the most of it for 6 or 7 years by the sounds of that. And actually even though I'm sure in that you've wasted thousands and thousands of dollars, like every person that goes over to fight for over the bar or buying the next stupid toy or whatever it is.
Yeah.
But to be able to set yourself up, and that's what for me is so important, because we've all done the wrong thing and we've all learned our lessons, but so many still continue to run in that same pattern. So it's that setting yourself up is the key to it, but having the structure to do that is so important as well.
Yeah, and I'd like, you know, I'm not trying to paint any other picture apart from the fact it was just, I don't know, a bit of blind luck and a bit of naivety. I didn't overcomplicate it. I just needed somewhere to live when I come home, and then I'd come home and obviously bills would come out and everything would come out, but I had plenty of money. The other thing that I really pushed myself to do was that if there was an opportunity to get an external course, then I would just put my hand up for everything. So, you know, as a young man, I was helicopter landing officer, firefighter, team leader. And so I just put myself forward, health and safety rep for the rig. So
how did that go from earning respect on that? Because a young guy in the middle of nowhere on a rig with all that testosterone, as you said, how did that play for you to be able to earn that respect, to be able to do your job and not maybe get bullied or not get picked on, whatever you want to call it? How did that work for you?
I just positioned myself that I was a bloody hard worker, like I was a grafter, and that really put me in good stead. And I think as a young fella who I would jump on a crane boom and go painting, or I'd chuck myself over the side of the rig, or I just put myself in anything, never really fazed me in that sense. So I'm cautious about bullying.
Yeah.
In the grand scheme, it was. But their induction process or whatever, however you want to paint it. So I actually had some, I think because I was so young compared to some of these guys who've been on the rigs for, I don't know, 20 odd years or whatever it was, you get a couple that take you under their wing and sort of, this is what you should do, this is what you shouldn't do, this is what you stay away from. Yeah. And the reality was that some of the people I worked with couldn't read or write, so they wouldn't go on a course.
it's true though, but you know, you say take you under your wing, and we all have it, and it's those mentors that are important right throughout all our careers and shape us to learn and to be who we can become, and ultimately look after us, I guess, too, is probably that, you know, it's almost the chaperone when you're cutting your teeth as well. But
yeah. That's right. And sometimes it's interesting that the people who decide to take you, because it was David Burgoyne. Who was he? I can't remember his bloody position now on the rig, but just a really lovely gentleman who would just spend the time with you, come and find you, just to say, how you going, mate? Obviously, as I worked my way through and up to the drill floor, he'd always be like, how's everything going? What's going on? That's not his position at all. He was like a barrage controller. So he would do the deluge and the ballasts and things like that. So, but just that guy who would always give you a wink and a nudge and say, how you going, mate? You doing all right? Traveling well? So, yep, doing all right. Thanks.
And how important is that? Because we've had a couple of other guys that I've been lucky to chat to, and that mateship, that camaraderie is something that in the FIFO space can be a challenge, because you've got your work crew and then you've got your home life. And when you're away so long, that home life becomes that distant, and you're often at home at times where everyone else is at work. So you say that mateship there, and how important was that in that actual environment for you?
Yeah, so some of the businesses that I own now are in collaboration with some of the guys on the drill floor.
Yeah, wow. Now,
that's a vast change. We're all like pulling slips as young men to now running online e-commerce businesses and what have you. So Where are we now? 41. So, yeah, 20 odd years now as friends.
Wow, how cool is that to be able to take that from there to now into a business sense, which is a perfect way to lead in to tell us about iPro Australia and what is it you actually do and how do you help people in all sorts of industries by the sounds of it too?
Yeah, so iPro started in the sports space. So I would send my kits out to researchers or sports scientists who wanted to look at the recovery rates of athletes, look at their immune system. So in high stress states, our first line defense immune system drops. So we're more susceptible to colds, flus, you know, viruses and what have you. So I set up a business originally to just do logistics, send the kits out, and then consult and support the people who are trying to use the kits. And then that was very much sport, military and research. That's where I branched into. And then some of the, I guess the corporate space, the consultants start to come to me and say, look, you can, I see the literature and you can map stress. Can we use that in the corporate space? And what was funny, Paul, was, you know, yeah, of course you can. Yeah, I sell kits, you buy kits, I'll send them out. And then you can, okay, brilliant. So we've got the numbers, but we don't really know what they mean. Okay, well, this is how I would interpret. And then they go, why don't you just come over and start like talking about this and delivering this content? And that's how I got into corporate space. Okay. Literally because they couldn't interpret the data or they weren't quite sure how you'd link the data to what they were finding or seeing in front of them. Yeah, and yeah. Now I work with the Big Four and where was I the other night? Tokyo the other night or via Zoom, obviously. Yeah. Delivering keynotes and what have you. So it's just exploded for me. It's been phenomenal.
Yeah, it's pretty exciting. So let's put it down into layman's term for and around stress. So we know that it can create so many issues. It can create depression, anxiety. There's so many people that relate to stress and it can go on to have so many greater impacts. How does it work for you to understand that we as men, let's just talk men, get to certain situations, our stress rises and then hopefully comes back under control. But how are you juggling that to understand what it's actually doing and how it's affecting us? Yeah. Because it's a very interesting thing and I'm sure it's very complex as well.
That's good. I'm thinking about the layers you were putting on top of each other there.
Yeah, okay, probably just throwing you under the bus there with just tell us how it works.
Let's start with the body has rhythms and it's a beautiful thing. And when you start to look at the physiology and then link in the physiology, psychology, what have you. So I'm a sports scientist on paper now. And I look at mapping stress markers, looking at the body's rhythm. And we know that there has to be a rise and a fall of one of the markers that most people know is cortisol. And as we map your cortisol response, we can see how the body is setting themselves up for the day. So we call that the cortisol awakening response. Then we also like to map at how that drops during the day and then at what level that is before you go to bed. So what you can imagine is that I come home, I'll use my scenario. I've been on the rigs for 3 weeks. I come home. The first thing I do is start guzzling the beers, which I'll definitely fall asleep, Paul, but it's the quality of sleep and the deep sleep I don't get. Yep. And then as I have poor sleep patterns, it really starts to affect my mental health. It can really chuck me out. So my emotional regulation and my thought processes are really skewed. And then that has a knock-on effect, whereas I'm not sleeping during the night properly because the beer, the alcohol really reduces that. Probably not eating properly. And I'm definitely not exercising because I'm having a beer every day. And this is me I'm talking about, by the way. And that whole rhythm, which is completely disrupting the pattern in which the body wants to try and get into. So like I said to you before, I'm not sleeping very well at night. Poor indicators during the day, which affects my night. And then as you look at that 3-week pattern, because we all do it. We get home, we release. By week two, we're a bit bored because everyone else is at work and you're kind of twiddling your thumbs. By week three, I'm thinking about going back to the rig. So my anxiety levels are starting to rise again. And that was the pattern and the rhythm I was creating, which I was saying was not, this is normal. This is what everyone does when they're on the rigs. And then by the time I get to the rig, I'm probably first week, I'm trying to get my pattern right again because I'm adjusting to 12-hour shifts. I'm probably detoxing. And you can imagine that 12-hour shifts of pulling slips, and I'm not in a very good state as it is. So this is the type of thing where we look at the patterns and the rhythms and how we fight against them with our normal, what we perceive as being normal. And a lot of that could be around just changing our state. So, you know, our mental state and our physical state. That can just reduce the impact of that stress response.
Yeah, well, it's, you talk about that cycle and that pattern, and that is almost FIFO in a nutshell, isn't it? It's you go there, whether you can have a beer at site or not, they're all different, or the amount that you can have, but
yeah.
You get home, you make up for it. Not everyone, but you try and make up for it, and then all of a sudden you're almost going back on shift
a week before
as tired or even more tired than when you left, because yeah. You've tried to fit everything into your break. You've tried to catch up with all your friends, your family and everything, and still have time for yourself to do whatever you wanted to do. You go back to work almost for a break for the first week to try and
100%. Yeah. You know, that. And if we look at that, what we know, Paul, and again, we're not saying everyone does this who works away.
100%.
But what I started to see, the dark places where people used to go on the rig, and as I reflect back as an older man now, I'm going to put myself in that category. A lot of them weren't fulfilling what they actually wanted to do when they were at home. So then they were coming to a rig where they're kind of stuck. You're stuck for three, sometimes in the UK sector, we were 4 weeks, four on, four off. And then there was all these cycles going through where you could have 12 hours on your own, sitting in a crane cab or wherever it might be, and your brain starts to whirl and process and overthink and complicating. And I just think about that. It's like there was no one to reach out, no one to talk to really about that type of thing. And so I just keep thinking about how we basically sabotage ourselves. And the environment that we work in when we're away just exaggerates the negativity of just going on the beers. And, you know, and it's one thing I look back as a when I was a young fella thinking I had no idea what I wanted to do. I was just having a good time, which is great. But next to me on the rig was a guy with four kids. You know, they're away from their family for 4 weeks at a time. I just couldn't imagine what game that plays.
Yeah, well, we know the statistics are ridiculously out of control, and the more that the awareness is out there, but it's now what are the outcomes that we can provide people to be actually able to say, look, we know this happens. This is real data. This is the statistics that are all too common. We all talk about it. We all know about it. But what we do know is what is available isn't working for everybody either. So it's these things that you're implementing into corporates, into sporting, into men or women in general that allows a different outcome to at least be able to understand what you can do differently in those heightened levels to be able to get a different result effectively.
Yeah, I totally agree with you. It's I don't know what the answer is. I'm not pretending to know that. I just look at the fact that, you know, safety measures were coming into play when I was working on the rig. So they were really, we would lose contracts if we weren't safe, or there was LT, lost time incidents, whatever it might be. So they really pushed on the safety side, but they didn't. But there was no, you know, I mean, in the sense of they would talk a good game in your pre-job safety, but then when you're out there, because you're on a time limit, it was just go no matter what, just get it done. And I just never, there was never even a conversation around how is everyone traveling, how they're looking after themselves, what is well-being. It was very much, once you get on that chopper and you leave the rig, you're on your own. Once you get back, you do 12-hour shifts and you just do as you're told. And I just wonder whether there is a shift out there that's available for people to understand that it's a bloody good industry. It's my opinion. It gives great opportunities to many, many people. It's quite an exciting industry, I think, from the outside. I'm not involved with it now, but it's an exciting industry. It's whether we can get people to really enjoy the journey within the industry, and whether they can, you know, really, I'm trying to get deeper and trying to keep away from the fluffy stuff here, you know, connect with why they're doing what they're doing.
Well, it's important because we started off on that note, and it's what's the reason for being there? And you spoke about it, how well you were able to set yourself up because of, by luck, by chance, by whatever, good fortune, it doesn't matter. It worked out for you. But I'm sure through your time there, you saw it go completely pear-shaped for so many people, like we all witness. And, you know, divorce, separation, you know, child support, suicides, depression, anxiety, whatever it is, you can rattle hundreds off the top of your head. It's if we have these things available to us so we can understand how we're actually feeling, you know, and that could be as almost a self-test kit, you know, it's like, how am I actually doing? If they could understand just a little bit of it, it's like, okay, implement the changes into their habits or their camp life.
The results. The term we use a lot, isn't it? I use it a lot. I guess it's the backbone to my delivery is about self-awareness. And in an industry, and I'm being presumptuous here, I've never worked in Australia or through any of the industries here, but it certainly wasn't available to even have that conversation about, you know, what is it all about? What is alcohol doing? How does that affect us? Have you got any financial goals? Have you figured out that what your values? One of the tools I use with my clients is called the value alignment. And is it, you know, we have to figure out what your values are, and that's a bit of a journey. But once you figure them out, you just tie them into what you're doing and how that helps you picture, you know, why am I doing this? And how is it affecting my relationships? And you know, how can I get the best out of what I've got here? Because I've got a great opportunity in the FIFO environment. I don't know how long your career lasts for on average in that space, but if you've got a short window, then, you know, get the bloody most you can out of it.
And that's it. That's, you never know what your lifespan is. And that's one of the biggest issues. It's the uncertainty of the industry, because whatever it might be, it might be the prices of the particular mineral, or it might be the job is only a short-term project. You might accidentally make a mistake, and that's your window seat out of there. And that's so common as well. So the uncertainty, and this is something when I speak to guys about the stress that's created from the uncertainty, which creates the overthinking, which creates, it snowballs. And it's these things that people could understand it themselves or understand the onset of that, then go a long way to actually allowing people to get the most out of it, I think.
Good conversation I have in many. So sporting environments, corporate environments, they all have that same conversation. Sporting athletes, I don't know how long my career is going to last. I'm fighting for a position within the team. If I get injured tomorrow, I don't know where I'll be next year. And so there's always that in the back of their brain. And in corporate world, well, if we go through a collapse again or whatever it might be, I don't know where my job will be. So we catastrophize these what ifs. And that, what I can tell you is that completely exaggerates the stress response in the body.
It's true. You see it every day. It's someone is just battling in their own little world. Could be the kids are sick at home. They can't concentrate on that. It's all of a sudden someone's cut them off in traffic and it's raining and they forgot their umbrella and all of a sudden the world's about to end because the kid was sick.
Yeah.
And it's compounded to get to work. You don't get anything done. Productivity is almost non-existent and it's costing companies money.
That's right. So there's two conversations, isn't there? I look at the corporate speak, the corporate chat, because we're trying to reduce what I would call the burden of burnout. That's my sort of catchphrase. Yep, I don't know. Yep. Yeah. So the burden of burnout, and that's the reason why I use it is quite broad, is that the burden of burnout financially or for your bottom line as a corporation, but the burden of burnout is really about relationships and where you go once you start to go down that slippery slope. And if you don't have the self-awareness, let's use that term, and the mate next door who can identify the signs with you, it's really hard to change your patterns unless you get a nice disruption to the pattern or whether you consciously change those patterns.
Yeah, that's a very valid point. So what is one of the biggest tips you could give to the people in this space that to deal with stress? What are some of the key things from all of your experience that they could do? They have opportunity to gyms, they have opportunity to better food, but what are a few things there that you would suggest for them?
Yeah, I'd like to draw it back, because I understand that now you've got health facilities available. So what I'd love to draw back is that, where's your skin in the game? What do you want to get out of it? What is your goal? Is that a financial goal? Is there something that you want to aim for? Have you got, have you agreed those goals with your family? Is that something that you've, you know, there's buy-in from the whole family about what you're trying to achieve? Because I know that some of my colleagues, my peers I used to work with, used to get pressure about not going back. Don't go back, because the family, you know, don't leave dad and, no, I don't want you to go. I'm struggling with the kids at home on my own. I don't want you to go. And you go, well, it's my job. And so understanding why you're in it, and I use the term, you know, I keep leaning back on the financial. It's not just financial. It could be a good career path for you. It could be, you know, to meet your expectation about where you want to sit. And agree those goals with your family. Because I don't think, if relationships are high up on your value, there's nothing worse than feeling like you're not ticking that box at home and you're not getting buy-in from the family. And that's the thing I would say, like, you've heard my story. So through luck or by, I don't know, by silly judgment, I've done well out of the industry. Financially, I set myself up very well. But I didn't have any children, anyone relying on me. I could just be silly old Chris Wilson and pay the mortgage off. So that would be it. I'd sit down, identify why I'm in it, but get buy-in from the family. And I'd also say about dealing with your fears. That's one thing that I see a lot of, no matter what industry I'm in, is that we've got these fears, these things that we're scared of. Maybe it's what people think about you. Maybe it's, what might happen or might not happen. And we use simple tools like, what can you control? How can you create certainty?
There's some very valuable tips there. And look, it's so important. And I talk about it with the guys I speak to as well. Having that structure, the reason why you're there, understanding what you can do and knowing that there's two sides to it, and relationships are so important because the wife or the partner is also living the FIFO life, just the other side of the coin.
Yeah.
So being mindful of that, because the first thing to fail is the relationships, because the lack of communication that starts from it, because you're such long shifts, you're tired, time zones are different, the kids are asleep, can't be bothered, whatever it might be.
Yeah.
The first thing that starts to dwindle, and that's the, when that separation starts to happen, it's very hard to pull it back, because that cycle does continue.
And then our ego kicks in, doesn't it? Like, I don't want to have to go home and apologize. I'm not going to say sorry for what I do. And then you have that bat in the heads.
It's just a continual battle then, isn't it? It is. And then you're on edge the whole time you're home.
We've spoken about it a few times tonight, and it's very hard for us as humans to change our pattern. That's a big ask, because our patterns are created by experiences and interpretations, what have you. So in order for us to change a pattern, I said to you before, you either need a big disruption. So if I could give you an example, it would be someone gets ill, or you have a bit of a scare, health scare. That's often a bit of a kick up the bum for some people, not everyone. Or you just interact with someone and go, do you know what? I'm going to do this. I'm going to get Paul in, and he's going to be my coach, and then I'm just going to make these changes. Mm. Because we don't know we're in a pattern. It's just the way we are. That's how we word it. And so you have to step out of your comfort zone, be a bit vulnerable, ask for a bit of help to get the disruption you need to change the pattern.
Well, we have coaches in all aspects of our lives except in our lives, which is so common. People call it a life coach, call it a mentor, call it whatever you might want to. But what you just said there is you can't see yourself from the inside because you're in it, you're living it, you are it.
Yeah.
The outsider looking in can see what you're doing and can allows you to disrupt that. So that could take us down a whole nother rabbit hole with what it is, and totally agree. But none of us get to where we are without some sort of a mentor or of a coach. So it's a very important thing. And I always say, if people are struggling, find someone that suits you and work with them.
Yeah. And it's often, you know, if there's buy-in from the other people, you've got to have that trust relationship with them, but also having someone who's impartial and maybe not involved in what you do is another way of just having that external point of view, like you say.
Agreed. So tell us, Chris, where can we find you? Tell us website for iPro Australia. Guys can get some more information. Corporates can get in touch with you, because what I see there is there's something there that's very, very valuable to not only people on an individual level, but a corporate level. So where can we get?
Yeah. And I'll say this, and it's not, look, I mean it sincerely. I really do. Is that we touch on little points in this conversation. So if people want to explore the conversation more, Chris, what did you mean by this? Or, you know, let's just clarify this for me, because I think it's relevant to me. I'm not quite sure. Then you can go on the website www.iproaustralia.com, but my email is chris@iproaustralia.com. but do you mind if I give out my phone number?
Probably wouldn't give it over the air, but it's in the
I'll give them yours.
It's in the link at the start of the podcast, when it, so we can, they can find you there if you're comfortable with it being on that as well. Otherwise, they can certainly message me and I can put them in touch with you as well, because I think there's a lot of conversations that you should be having with people out there, and I think it's very, very valuable.
Yeah, look, Paul, I appreciate it. I know we speak. It's not just on the podcast, but I'm really excited for you, mate. And I think there's a lot of talking going on. There's been a lot of talking for a long time. I just don't see, we don't see the changes that we're really expecting. And it's not happening bloody fast enough as far as I'm concerned.
No, I agree. Like myself, you're all about outcomes as well, and giving people opportunity to understand that, and for me as well. But again, it's not about that today. It's about,
sorry.
It's about iPro Australia. So look, I do appreciate it, mate, and I know that we'll chat further after this, but for anyone out there, get in touch with Chris. You can also find him on LinkedIn, so I suggest you get in contact. But until next time, mate, thank you.
Thanks, Paul. Take care.
Well, thanks for tuning in today, guys, and I hope you did get some value from that today. Hope you enjoyed the story that you may have just heard. And if you did get some value, I'd appreciate and be very grateful if you could like and share this podcast with other people, because there might be someone out there that might be struggling today that just needs to hear the story from someone else, to realize that they're not alone, to realize that there is hope, and to realize that you can overcome the very struggles you might be dealing with now. So until next time, stay safe, take care. I'm Paul, the founder of Freedom in Finding Ourselves, and you can always find me over at LinkedIn or on Facebook at Mental Freedom, or you can email me at paul@freedominfindingourselves.com. Stay safe. Take care.